Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 338 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, send you over to Jason Rugard. He will give us a rundown.
On tonight's episode, it is full of movie talk. We're not doing anything by the book. We're going back to an old format and just shooting the shit on air here.
I wasn't aware we did anything by the book. But
yeah, we're not very corporate around here, as you can tell.
I can't read, so.
Well, good.
No books here. We can only do movies.
Which luckily has a lot of pictures, and they move. So let's talk about some of these moving pictures, and let's talk about MoviePass specifically. I was an early adopter of this technology, this startup, whatever you want to call it. Back in late 2014, I got it. I've used it literally hundreds of times. I've gotten my full value out of it over the years. It has now, as of, what is this today, July 30th, 2018, seemed to have ceased existing as we know it. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's what they ran out of money a couple of days ago. That was uncovered. They won't admit it, but now we've got the same thing going on again, right? Where you just can't go see a movie. There's no listings. So did they run out of money again in 2 days?
Well, something was funny over the weekend when Mission Impossible. I mean, we heard about those troubles on Thursday nights. People couldn't check into it. Not only that, it wasn't even an option throughout the weekend because they knew that was the bulk. What I said to you off air and what I'll propose to you on air is how much business was affected by Mission Impossible. I mean, could it have made another 15 million possibly if you could have checked into it? I mean,
yeah,
how much was hurt by that?
First, I'd like to say yes to your proposal because, as always.
You waited 337 episodes to get it. So.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, of course. But yeah, it had to have been hurt. I read a Deadline, I think, article on this, and they said, it didn't seem to hurt Mission Impossible, which opened with its biggest opening of the franchise, blah, blah, blah. And you think, oh, good Lord, you know, in the least, this had to have hurt a couple million.
Mm-hmm. From everything.
At
I think
least,
the entire
if not
office.
More than that, really.
Do you know what I've noticed? I mean, summertime, you obviously have midweek business at the box office and people go a lot more. But the Mondays and Tuesdays have been averaging so much higher than typical. And I got to believe that's because of MoviePass and things like that, that there's a tendency then to go on these days when there's not surge pricing, especially the last couple
of weeks. I have to agree. Well, those are the days when you go and just see whatever's available, right, that you wouldn't normally go. I mean, that's what the MoviePass affords a lot of people is even heavier visits to the movie theaters, and that means especially this year, right, going to see things you would normally go see, because it's for as crowded as every year is, this year has been fairly light really on releases.
It has definitely
feels like
some
it
films
anyways.
Up when they released their stats mid-July a couple weeks back, I guess now, what movies had the most tickets sold. They had said over 1.25 million for the Avengers, over 1 million for Black Panther, and the 700,000s for big hits like Jurassic Park and things like this at the time. So, I mean, they're losing money on every transaction. What kind of business model where the business goes out of business if you use the business? It makes no sense. The more you use it, the more it hurts
yeah.
the company?
I mean, that sounds like I'm running it, right? I don't know. They were supposed to have the other avenues of selling this in some way. I don't know. They just wanted to get numbers, right? They wanted to get the subscription numbers.
They thought that was going to do
but
it.
But I don't know what that necessarily does for them. There's supposedly some last-ditch Hail Mary effort. You know, the word on the street anyways is that this isn't quite the end, that they will be back up. But then the question is for how long, right? Because I don't know. If you're having to borrow $5 million and that only lasts you a couple days, you're pretty much screwed, right? I do find it interesting how many people did the math on this months ago, right, for how much cash they must be burning through per member based on the membership numbers and stuff, and literally said end of July, beginning of August, this thing will go bankrupt. And here it is. Happens.
Yeah, it followed that economic model and that algorithm perfectly. I'm a little concerned though, because I really enjoyed this service when it was
I loved
in its
it.
Infancy. Yeah, I mean before now,
it's
things
so,
changed
well,
though.
Did you love it because it was cheap, or did you love it before when it was
before
three times the cost?
When it was $40 a month, mm-hmm. and it had all glitches then too. Trust me, you couldn't see a movie.
Sure, I remember.
Now it's one calendar day you can see a movie. Back then it was 24 hours. If you saw that 10 p.m. showing, you had to wait to the following day's 10 p.m. showing to see something again. Right. They got rid of that.
I mean, that you gets you to skip a day.
You could only see one movie once in the theater, and then they reinstated that and then took it back, and people were bitching now. And I never even knew that they put it back into effect. So I always was just seeing one at a time. And there's ways to get around that. But also, the number of theaters that have gone to reserve seating now, as opposed to 2014 when this first came out, is, you know, three times as high. So you having it where you can't pick your seat is a shit feature. But why not show ads in the app? Why not do some of these revenue making things within the app itself?
Well, they have been doing that, right? And they've been working with a lot of indie. They get paid millions of dollars by.
Advertisers.
They make deals, to push a movie, right? Then they've been doing that. That obviously hasn't helped them in any way. But, you know, back to the movie theater thing and kind of this void that MoviePass is filling. When you think about how theaters have now less seats available to them, right? You talk about e-ticketing and buying before you go, the reserving your seat. Now it's all luxury seating, which means less seats, right?
Yeah.
Clearly we're not filling up theaters. We're not worried about, you know, having the most amount of seats to fill up the theater anymore. We're just worried about getting people in to see it all. And I noticed the other day, just the idea that there really aren't a lot of premium tickets being sold. There aren't a lot of premium screenings anymore, especially in 3D stuff. And, and even the bigger screen stuff seems to be kind of sliding back a little bit.
Yeah, the XD formats or those quasi IMAX formats, even IMAX itself. Well, you know, when the MoviePass wasn't allowing me to look at Mission Impossible this weekend, I went on Fandango, which was always kind of the trick, right? You go on Fandango to look at how many people are in the theaters to see if you can go to that show and use your MoviePass is kind of what I was always doing. And as I'm looking at different screens and different options for Mission Impossible in different areas in my, you know, metro area, because I'm in the Bay Area, so there's a lot of places to see movies around here in different venues. The pricing structure on all these was different. In one IMAX theater 15 miles from here wanted $22 per ticket for the 2D experience. And the other IMAX theater, 8 miles from here, less than that in fact, wanted $15. And I don't understand how they can justify. Yeah, it was a great deal. I don't know. I think maybe because of matinee. I'm not really sure, but still.
Yeah, I mean, the fake IMAX screen here, but the one we have here is like $18 matinee, like $22.
That's out of control. You
know, regular.
That's out of control. This is why a service like Cinemania, is that
Cinemania?
Cinemania, which I like looking at, and I'm kind of contemplating jumping to. You're
it's not
saying
worth
no
it. Though. Stupid. Yeah, because you have to go see the premium. Well, ticket prices being what they are here, that service is not worth it. I'm just pre-buying tickets. You know, it's not a deal unless I go to see
right
a
now.
Premium thing. Yeah, for a couple months, right? For 3 months.
No, you can lock that in all year, I believe. I think you can lock that in for a year. You pay a year in advance.
You only get one ticket though, right?
So they have a $13.99 plan that you can get three tickets a month, and it also includes we get nothing out of this. We're not sponsored by this by
I'm
any
looking
means,
this up.
As I tell you
just
this
to
on
be
air.
Sure. I thought this was only a couple months, but if it's
$13.99, I believe, and you better jump on this quick because if people are jumping from MoviePass, they're going to look for something like this. Because what you don't want is a subscription-based service where you can only go to a certain type of theater, a Century, a Cinemark, an AMC. I don't want that.
No, you're right, because this is billed annually.
Yeah.
So it does get you this for a year.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the smart play would be to jump on that because MoviePass is, as we know it, no longer. I see. I got you over there.
Oh, you can do cheaper ones too. Oh, but you can only go up to two tickets a month.
Three, I believe. On that $13.99
plan. You can. You're right.
Yeah, and that includes like a premium.
Oh,
kickback.
You son of a bitch! I'm going to be signing up for this. How long does this last for?
I wouldn't sleep on this because the day that MoviePass goes down, this probably gets a million people going to that website. So I would get on there.
It's a summer sale.
Well, we are in the dog days, as you and I sweat.
Yeah, what does this month go to? Does this go to one more day?
I wouldn't sleep on it, sir. I wouldn't sleep.
Have you signed up yet?
No, I'm doing the same thing you are. I'm doing the exact same thing you are. I sat there, looked at it for half an hour, went, should I? Ah, MoviePass might come back. MoviePass will never come back in a form that we know where you can see all the first run shit. You'll be able to see the indie stuff because that's only selling, what, 200,000 tickets tops? Tops. All right, let's move on since I blew your mind.
You did.
Let's talk,
now I'm on here.
Let's talk the failure of comedies at the box office this year. There hasn't been one breakout comedy. We're now almost at the end of summer. All the big offerings are out. Big stars this year came out with products. You had Amy Schumer, Melissa McCarthy. Night. Game Night was the last one that really did well. Even Tag.
Game Night's the only one that did well.
And that was last year.
If even it did well.
But things like Blockers, they all hit a certain range between about 40 and 60 million, really in an average of 50 in there, where Tag and Life of the Party died at. Why can't they break through? Like, why is there no breakthrough? Is it a tired genre? They need to retire comedies for a while? I mean, we were
I don't think they've really had anything, at least that piqued my interest, right? It's just, I mean, maybe it's just an off year. I don't know. I mean, last year wasn't all that amazing either. I think, like, Girls Trip was the biggest one, right?
It was a breakout hit, and there usually is one of those per summer.
I mean, a breakout hit on a comedy is fairly weak. We haven't seen a very good breakout comedy in a while, right? I mean, Girls Trip did, what, a little north of 100 million? It's not incredible.
That was big for, even the fact that we have a dying genre, I feel like, here. And since then, yeah. You had Game Night, which did high 60s, but that's maybe even low 70s. But that's not on the level of things. I mean, back when Vince Vaughn could throw out a useless comedy, Sandler could throw out a nothing film, you know, Ferrell could do the same. And these things were easily passing over 100, sometimes to 140, 150. Mm-hmm. Those days are gone now. And I'm just wondering, are all these going to end up on Netflix at some point? Are we just not going to see comedies on the big screen? Because I got to be honest, even with a movie pass, I rarely go see comedies on the big screen. They just play vacant to me. They're not usually – I mean, some of the great ones like Nutty Professor and Liar Liar and Dumb and Dumber, I can recall where audiences are laughing so hard you can't even follow up dialogue. But it's been so long since an experience I had like that in a theater, in a communal group. It really, you go now and I feel like it's a disappointment half the time.
I'll disagree with that because especially in the theaters, people laugh at an unfunny comedy. That's my experience. My experience has been people will laugh, period, no matter what. It's rare to go and not find at least a couple people who aren't laughing at a lot of things that just aren't funny.
No, I agree. I saw Masterminds in the theater because I had the movie pass and there was a guy next to me who thought maybe it's one of the top three comedies ever.
Well, I definitely think that movie theater, if anything, watching something like that at home is worse because no one's laughing. It's a better experience in the theater for that reason. Either that or at least it's entertaining because you get mad at the person. Why are you laughing?
I can see your point. Although, some comedies do play better at home. I saw The House on home media. I don't say home video anymore. Mm-hmm. I said to somebody that was young the other day, hey, hand me that tape. And it was a VHS tape. And he didn't understand why I called it a tape. And I just said, get the goddamn movie.
Because it's regardless. Tape. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, hand me that disc.
And it was in a clamshell.
Why would you say disc? Because it's a disc. It was a clamshell.
It wasn't a clamshell. It was a children's film. But, you know, comedies not only are typically one note. My big thing – I was thinking about this the other day. I want to talk about this with you.
Well, especially because these comedies, as you've already mentioned, are character-based, right? If not fictionally character-based of the characters in the movie, but also of the movie star that's in the comedy, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is usually the same personality over and over and over in different variation. Yeah. Comedy sequels almost always – are terrible, right? They're just I call them like the home run lap. Like, hey, we're just going to do this one more time. Like, hey, remember when we did this and it was so much fun the first time? Don't you remember that? And I feel like there's of course exceptions to the rule. I would say American Pie 2. I would say 22 Jump Street. I mean, there's probably a handful of other ones that you could throw in there, maybe a top 10. But
we usually
90%
don't see
of them, 99% of them.
A lot of sequels to comedies. So that's what I'm just trying to think.
I mean, you can
really
the easy.
Oh, and if there are, then they go straight to video a lot of times as well. You know, they'll swap out characters for lesser known actors, right?
I mean, I could tell you just, you know, offhand here, we got Hangover 2 is one of the worst sequels of all time, not just comedy sequels. And Caddyshack 2, Ghostbusters 2 is a thin imitation of the first one. I mean, anything that they kind of come out with a 2 with, you want to like everyone's clamoring for a Step Brothers 2 after all this time. No, keep it. Even Anchorman 2 sucked, right?
I mean, Anchorman 2 is unwatchable. Yeah, I mean, the Dumb and Dumber sequel is pretty bad.
You go through the list and it becomes, you start piling up and you say, why, you know, why are these victory laps being taken other than just having a money grab and just reminding you of the, which I was honestly is kind of what I started feeling.
It's a difficult genre though, right? I mean, that's why we have so many horror sequels as well, right? Those are both very difficult genres where you put anything new out, you have no idea if that's going to be a hit or a miss, and very likely you're going to wind up with a miss.
So they reboot things and whatnot. But things that I thought were amusing and made decent money, like Vacation, which is a reboot of a sequel, you know, a certain comedy that has sequels, they don't do anything with.
Vacation's a terrible movie. No, I'm going to agree with you. I think Vacation's actually funny, but it is a terrible movie. That's its problem. It's just not a very good movie, but it has some absolutely hysterical moments. Me and my brother still quote the rim job line. You know, never too old to have your old man give you a rim job. It's hysterical.
You know, I think that there's a lot of good lines in that movie. A lot of them. I think it's a fun movie. In fact, I think it's one of the better comedies that's come out in the last couple of years. I thought Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates was really like the last kind of good gross out comedy that they had. Mm-hmm. And Girls Trip had an element of that, and Cock Blockers does too, or Blockers as it's known now. But really comedies, and you talked about horror, and horror and comedy are strange genres that live and die by their pop moments, if you will. You know, like their big moments, their jump moments, or their laugh moments. Right. And horror is experiencing this resurgence that we haven't seen in a long time. I know we always write horror off.
It'll fall though. I mean, they're slow. You can already see the Blumhouse stuff is tapering off in quality quite a bit lately.
It's a little bit too much quantity, I think.
Yeah,
that there may be a little too much product being pushed out. But I'm just with the comedy thing. I'm just looking at this lineup of things I've seen this year and the comedies that have come out, and it's kind of just depressing in the fact that there hasn't been that big. And where is the next breakout comedic star? Is it someone from Saturday Night Live? Is it a stand-up comedian? Is it somebody we don't know? Is it a television star? I mean, where is it?
Well,
he or she?
It's either The Rock or Vin Diesel. That's my picks.
Well, Kevin Hart, some could say, is like what the highest grossing of the screen comedians right now?
Yeah, right now. He's number one, but that'll go away. Unfortunately for him, sorry. Yeah. Well, it's happened to everyone that's come before him, so unfortunately it'll pass. But I don't know. Yeah. It's just such a, I mean, comedy and horror as well is such a fad, you know, with any iteration of it. So
it's also comedy can be very timely and topical, and if it's past its moment, they don't usually age well. You go back and watch some of those comedies from the 90s. You can watch Half Baked. It's terrible. It's like it's barely put together. It's hanging together.
Well,
by
those are bread. I mean, especially a comedy in the 90s can be pretty cheap. But then you also do get your the movies like Austin Powers, which I think that an Austin Powers 4 might actually have a shot at being good.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would totally welcome an Austin Powers 4. That entire series is solid.
Yeah,
the high point to me is 2,
of
which
course.
I think most people would agree with. But that's once again,
even the
that's
third
movie,
one, which is a blow off one and just really feels like the least amount of effort was put into it. It's hysterical.
Well, I would agree with that. And I think I was going to say the second one is one of those films that I mentioned earlier where people were laughing so hard you couldn't hear above it. I mean, that was like an experience in the theater. Let's move on and talk about James Gunn. And this is kind of a touchy subject because there's a lot of heated sensibilities on both sides. And we don't want to get too, problematic on this podcast. But we want to point out and talk about here briefly is that the entire cast, principal cast of the Guardians franchise has come out publicly and stood behind Gunn and request his services back as director of the third film. They were talking about replacing him with the director of Thor Ragnarok. Would you be okay with that? Or do you think that Gunn owns?
I mean,
this
that was just, like that? I don't think Disney's been talked about replacing, Feige or however, whatever his name is, Fuji.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone said anything officially on any level, right, about what they're going to do here. If they're going to ditch the script, if there's going to be a new script. Certainly, this is a different situation with Marvel, where they could possibly keep the script and just hire another director. But even at this stage with Star Wars movies and stuff, they've ditched scripts when they've gone to a new director, right? So that could happen. I think this is interesting and very different than what we've seen in the past, because you have the whole cast here saying, you know, bring him back. You have a huge petition saying, bring him back, you know. And it's kind of, how does Disney like position themselves now? I'm wondering, you know, I feel like they've kind of set themselves up to where they didn't have a choice but to fire him. I mean, especially coming after the Roseanne stuff and everything that they've done and all of the politics and everything that's going on right now, they kind of just didn't have any position but to fire him, right? I think they did it too quickly, because it looked like they didn't even take any thought to it, which is,
it was reactionary,
just silly. Absolutely. Right, that makes them look really bad in my mind. Like, they should at least have put some thought into what they're actually doing here, you know, and what the outcome of this is going to ultimately be. But I don't know, it almost feels like there's a chance that they could rehire him, right? Am I crazy? It does feel like there is, it's slim, but it's there.
It feels like this is a different situation than a Bryan Singer or something like that.
It's a different situation than all of that, than any of it, right? Than Weinstein, than Spacey, yeah. than any of them, right? It's a completely different thing. And not only is it, I mean, for the conspiracy issues, right? The whole insane right wing thing that's going on with this, but just for the fact that this was already known. Not only was this already known, but already addressed. He was already addressed. Yeah. Yeah. At when he started the Guardians of the Galaxy, well, the first one, right? This has already been hashed out in some way. So it just feels like I don't know what this is. It's just really weird.
I would advise anybody out there that has a Twitter account that's in the entertainment industry to take a good look at it and maybe scrub it if there's anything questionable, because
you can't.
How many hundreds of millions of dollars of lost revenue has Twitter caused? I mean, for good or bad, but just like it is an actual financial dollar amount. It has to be hundreds of millions of dollars for people. It really has to be. And who the fuck is still tweeting in 2018? Get off Twitter.
Everybody.
Jesus Christ,
we're,
man,
the only ones not.
Well, this is apparently why, because we have the balls to go and videotape ourselves saying stupid shit. So
exactly.
There's no way we're running for president.
We'll look you right in the eyes when we say
stupid shit.
I don't know what we said. I won't repeat what we said. No one should. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's a different situation, and I'm on pins and needles waiting to see what happens here. You know, I mean, Disney is the top dog, right? They're the big corporate guys right now. So, I don't know, slim chance. But what do you think? My guess is they do absolutely nothing. They hire someone else.
I think that this blows over in a year's time when this goes before cameras, if not longer, and they reinstate him. I really do. I think that this becomes...
Well, they don't have a year, right? I mean, this movie's on the slate. I don't think they're gonna hold off on it. So he's going to miss out directing this. You think they'll bring him back for a future movie? I don't think he'll find a problem getting a job elsewhere.
No. He's, you know who quietly, though, is never hired again? Is John McTiernan. Where is John McTiernan? I know he served time in that whole Pelicino wiretapping case.
I don't know. He maybe retired, you know. He's kind of old.
Oh, did he now? He retired, did he? I just think, like, God, the guy can't helm it.
He was out of the game for how long, though? I mean, and when you get old and you're out of the game, maybe you just quit. Maybe he's retired. I do like McTiernan.
Definitely do like a Lethal Weapon episode or something like that. Throw the guy a freaking bone.
That's beneath him.
I will not. There's no Shakespeare in this. Let's talk about Star Trek 4. There's a couple things going on with the Star Trek franchise. First, to get off the bat, you and I are big fans of the first three, correct?
Yeah, I really love this Star Trek reboot. I mean, the first one blew me away. The second one I liked.
Faltered, I thought. Faltered.
You didn't like it. I did like it. It's not the best one, but I still liked it, mainly because I just like this cast that's in this. You know, I really, really like this cast. And the third one's just an awesome flick. The third one's the best one, really, in my opinion. It's the most watchable, for sure. It's just fun. Yeah, exactly. It really is just fun. I can't wait for a fourth one. But I don't know. The Tarantino stuff is awfully odd.
Well, they're saying we're at least 6 years away from a Tarantino Star Trek flick. I don't know if that means we're just going to get a script by Tarantino.
What is that?
What I would really love to see, like in a fantasy world, is Tarantino to deliver a script and Ridley Scott to make a Star Trek film. I'd like to see that. Because Tony Scott made a couple of Ridley Tarantino scripts. And I thought
it would be too like operatic and like slow and like
it's measured.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really want to see classic Star Trek anymore. I'm good with the new ones. I want to see action.
Well, the fourth one that was kind of debated about, considering that the last one did fare at the box office, although I think that it was kind of overshadowed. It financially, but really a fun movie. I don't know. I really don't understand why it didn't fare better. Maybe people have found it on Amazon or other streaming services. But the plot for Star Trek IV, it's rumored to be the plot, is whales. To have the idea of Chris Pine's Captain Kirk's father returning, Chris Hemsworth. So you'd have both the Chris's in one movie here, doing like the time travel element they hinted at in the first one, and to bring back another star.
William Shatner's going to be the grandpa?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's going to find his way in there, right?
He'll weasel in there at some point.
Yeah, he'll pop in.
I mean, it's unbelievable the guy's still around. You forget that he's still around and Sean Connery, who's like totally a hermit now. He turned into Finding Forrester.
Sean Connery looks, though, yeah, not that there's any recent pictures I've seen lately, but before he went into solitude there, good God, that man aged very quickly. I just can't imagine.
I like how you say he went into solitude. It's like he's like Raja Ghul.
He did, though. He's exactly like that. I feel like he's in a castle. He's in a castle in Scotland. You know? That's what I feel like. He's got to be.
Working on his thievery tricks with entrapment. I don't know. I'm down for a Star Trek 4. S.J. Carlson is going to be the director. She's a female director. I'm not sure what got her the job or she has. I don't follow the Star Trek universe like some people do. People are as passionate about Star Trek as they are Star Wars. I've lost my
fandom to both
of these things. I could IMDb her just as easily as you, and neither of us have done this. So apparently too popular. But
no, that's fine. I mean, New Blood's fine. That could be interesting then.
I welcome another version of this with this group. I like this core. Keep the band together. Give me another song. Speaking of Star franchises, Star Wars, which we've debated about much on this show. You and I are both in agreement. The Last Jedi was no good. We differed on Solo. I thought it was fun. You thought it was a weak box checking of all the things in the series. Carrie Fisher, though, who died, unfortunately, is going to be back using deleted footage from Force Awakens in Star Wars 9. And what I'm asking here is, didn't the Blu-ray have all the deleted scenes? Won't this just be footage we've already seen of Carrie Fisher?
I don't know. I mean, it may not. I mean, now that they shoot...
I don't know, everything
that movie wasn't shot on film, right?
That was digital.
It was digital.
Yeah.
I mean, now that they shoot digital, those cameras roll all the time, right? Typically. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's plenty of footage, as well as they often say this kind of stuff, and then they do special effects, right, to make to make old footage different than it was, or stand-ins, you know, right? They can edit around things and put new stuff in here.
Well, you just saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, and we'll do our review of that on a separate show, but they de-aged Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer in that film, and it looks spectacular. I think it's the best looking that I've ever seen. But in that film, did it not look better than it's ever looked before?
It looks great, and everything they do, I don't want it done anymore. Stop it.
I don't like it. I was blown away when she walked out of there. I said, oh my God, I used to love Michelle Pfeiffer. We'll get into that review, but how not little anymore. Is she in that movie? Is she in that movie maybe 4 minutes tops screen time?
We'll talk about that. I mean, yes, I have a lot of that movie's a bit of a letdown for me for many reasons, but yeah, I mean, she's really hard. She's not in it enough, you know?
Yeah,
I agree. I really thought she was, and especially at the end when they bring her in and she, you know, she's like doing all the work and everything. It's like, well, God, where was she the whole movie?
Yeah, we'll talk about that on our next episode. But that's going to wrap up our podcast for tonight. We want to thank you all for joining and for listening on the various formats. You can check us out live. I guess not live. We recorded this live. You can watch us at any time of the night or day.
We're as live as any of the late night shows.
That's right. Hey, coming to you live. But you can check us out on YouTube, Movie Mavericks channel, and also you can check us out on Spotify. You can't see the video, but you can listen to this great podcast now on Spotify. So if that's how you want to listen to us, great. Hello on Stitcher, Podbean, wherever else you may be getting this. We want to say thank you guys for continuing to listen. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!